F2. Number 17A.
Because man is the compound idea of God, therefore including all qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. You see, here he enumerates then how truth, as a perfect ability sense, brings those true human qualities to birth in us. Like he says, to be honest, to be just, to be pure, to be loving, to have a good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. You see, it makes us conscious of all that is good and true. Then, in the last subject, in love, he shows how the fullness, really, of the Christ translates love to us, and bring something in us towards perfectibility, which is of the nature of love, of superabundance, of love that meets all needs, of love that knows no lack, of love that can accept what is good. He shows here, he gives here that account that he said, well, he praises the Philippians again, because they were so good with him, always. He said, right from the first days, you were so good to me. The Philippians were those when he was cast out of Philippi, you know, they cast him out of that city and went to Thessalonica? Yeah. They were so good and sent after him and brought him all sorts of things which he needed for his daily life, supported him and nourished him. And now even in Rome, when he was in Rome in prison, they would think of him, of his need, and through a messenger brought to him all sorts of things. And he said to them, well, I will accept it. So he said, I can do it without accepting it. But he says, I'm going to accept it because I want to nurture in you that loving sense of being mother to everyone. He said, no, I don't accept it because I need it, he said, but because I want to affirm and establish in the Philippians that wonderful sense of expressing the motherhood sense, of expressing that caring sense for everyone. He is quite a guy, Paul. He says, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me has flourished again. You see, he rejoices in the fact that love was at work in them to bring out the sense of love in them. That's what he was interested in. Wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. See, love is that state where we don't try to meet more needs. Really, where in love we begin. The perfectibility of love is there where we don't feel anymore so many needs. That's the greater demonstration. When one begins to comes into Christian Science, it's usually first the other way around. One thinks, oh, that's fine. I have found now a science which meets all needs. It doesn't say human needs. See, it says, well, love meets all needs. And I just know how many needs I have. And the more one thinks about it, the more needs one can think about it, and that just grows more needs. Therefore, we must make more demonstrations and more demonstrations to meet those needs. Well, that's not what love wants us to do. Love wants us to have less, to feel less human needs. And that's what he says. See, happiness is not achieved by meeting needs. Happiness is achieved by having less and less needs. That's the old Greek philosophy already. He says that, you see, he says, not that I speak in respect of one, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. He said, I can put up with every situation, it doesn't matter, because I don't foster up and build up more and more needs. What is in the Christ consciousness when one touches love is something very, very different, namely to give out the idea. That's what one is living for, to nurture the idea, to mother the idea, to support the idea, to protect the idea. And one doesn't think how much in a human way or even material way do I get for it. I know both. You see, he says, I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Both sides didn't much impress him. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. For him all that just didn't count. When he got that sense of love that he is there to push forward in this high calling, and to do that job which Jesus asked him to do, to go out to the Gentiles and to kings, and perhaps even to the children of Israel. Well, he went once to the children of Israel to preach it, and he was in prison, never got out of it again. So he did all that, and that was his life purpose. And in there he found satisfaction. In there he saw he was meeting a need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. You see, he said, I can do all things through Christ. If I abound or if I'm hungry, he said, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter a bit. Mrs. Eddy said when she found signs that she became poor for Christ's sake. She didn't say, something is wrong about this whole thing. I lose and lose and lose more money. That doesn't matter. She abounded in the Christ. So that's what he teaches here, that sense of love, that he says, if I accept from you Philippians your wonderful gift you are sending me, I accept it not because I need it, but because I want to strengthen in the Philippians the idea of love, the idea of motherhood. And not to say, don't mother. Yes, do mother. Do mother. And strengthen that. But my God shall supply all your needs according to the riches in glory by Christ. He says, if you mother, you will never lose anything. And you will always see that in every part of the world where there is somebody who mothers the idea, that one will never lose a thing. It will gain respect, it will gain more than respect, it will gain love, it will gain anything that is of true riches, anything. That's what is true substance. So, that's the story. I just want to go over it to catch the tone, you see. Let's catch the tone again, how he says, what is now here the standpoint? It's still the Christ, the fullness of Christ, the glory of Christ, that wonderful glory which just doesn't have any limits, doesn't have any opposing restrictions. He says, you see, if you are one with that one Christ, then that Christ comes to us and abides within us in its fullness, that's Ephesians, and now in Philippians, and works in us towards ever greater perfection, towards an ever greater sense of perfection. So that which has begun the good work, is going on doing that good work until the good work is fully performed, until the day of Christ. What does that Christ do in Philippians in the way of perfectibility? Well, what does it do as mine? It shows it brings an ever greater enrichment of the ideas of mind, a greater enrichment of knowledge, of understanding, of intelligence, of wisdom. As spirit, it brings an ever-growing sense of spiritual progress and of spiritual unfoldment in spite of all human restrictions. As soul, it brings within us and builds within us an ever greater sense of spiritual resurrection, of spiritual identification. It begins to work within us and brings us principle an ever greater sense of being able to stand within the world of dogmas and theories and sciences, etc., and to be untouched by any worldly conditions. As life, it shows what it brings is an ever greater impulse to go forward, an ever greater drive to go forward along the way of life towards that goal of high calling. And in truth, it shows that truth is doing something in us. It brings us to an ever greater sense of all that is true, of all the true qualities, that it begins to awaken in us a love and an adherence to always higher and better human qualities which reflect truth. And in love, he shows that what it affects in us is that we begin to express more and more a higher sense of giving, a higher sense of mothering, a higher sense of caring and ministering the universe. See, that's what happens. These are all qualities which we long for. But longing for is not enough. We have to see how, through the Word and through the Christ, these qualities are being born in us so that God makes them grow within us. And not our human desires tries to establish them. I think I have to stop here. So, let's see the law of Philippians on page 116. It's very simple law, but it's wonderful to realize it and pray about it, which just shows us that when we joyfully really abide in our faith in Christ, in our conscious, constant communion with all what the Christ is and the fullness of Christ, that then naturally we have accepted the Christ, and so the Christ then operates within us as an agent of perfection, as a perfecting agent, which always brings us nearer towards complete perfection. So it impels us, it's an impelling power. Christ is always an impelling power within us, bringing us nearer and nearer to perfection. So I think whenever we have a feeling that we are not making any progress, that we are feeling that we are not going forward, that we are not really on our way to the goal of the high calling, well, it's perhaps because in our consciousness that law of Philippians is missing. So it's good to become conscious of that law and see, well, after all, there is never anything going on but the perfection of being. Therefore, I can start with mine and can say, all right, and as I'm consciously conscious of my unity with that one divine mind, then the Christ mind is constantly at work in me and bringing out in me, manifesting out in me, always an ever-growing sense of all the ideas of mine, an ever-growing sense of law, of that sense of being law-abiding, of being active, of being creative, of being powerful, of being constantly active and in motion, where I have that sense that because I am one with this divine mind, there is an ever-growing sense in me and driving me towards higher insights or greater sense of light, of wisdom, of apprehension, of comprehension, of spiritual insight and so on. You see, then take spirit. So we can know for ourselves, well, if I really am inwardly and constantly and rejoicefully feel one with the spirit of God, with that one spirit, that one spirit has a Christ, and that Christ works in me towards an ever greater sense of order, of spiritual progress, of spiritual unfoldment, of spiritual baptism. Well, you can take any ideas of spirit. Then, as so, you just can sit back and pray and see, well, if I'm one with soul, then I'm one with all of soul, with the whole aspect of God as soul. Therefore, soul works in me, that one God works in me as soul, to an ever greater sense of satisfaction, an ever greater sense of freedom, an ever greater sense of bliss, an ever greater sense where spiritual sense is unfolded in me, where spiritual understanding is folded in me, an ever greater sense that everything becomes divinely identified and divinely named in me. Can you see that? Then perhaps you go to principle and you say to yourself, all that is ever going on is principle and its idea. All right, what does that mean? Well, if I am consciously one with that principle and just rejoice that I am one with the fullness of that principle, I can also see that I can rejoice that that fullness of principle is constantly working in me and bringing out in me an ever greater sense of authority, an ever greater sense of government and of self-government, an ever greater sense of scientific apprehension, of academics of the right sort, an ever greater sense of being able to classify and systematize my thinking and my work and everything, an ever greater sense of the true government of my body, of the true government of my business, of the government of my relationship. I get an ever greater sense of being principle-like. You just think about the ideas of principle that comes at the moment to your consciousness. And so you can do it with life. You can see, well, there is only one being, God, life, the infinite life. There isn't any other being than life. All right. If I go to Philippians, I can see I can be one with that life through my faith. That is, through my conscious, constant communion with that life, which is the only life, which is the full life, the only fullness of life. That fullness of life has a Christ, as Philippians, has a Christ that constantly works in me to an ever, ever greater sense of life. What does it mean? To an ever greater sense of the vitality of life, of the newness of life, of the spontaneity of life, of the freshness of life, of the highway of life, of the method of living a divine life, of knowing how to go the way of life, of knowing what the method of life is, an ever greater sense of that supply of life, that abundance of life, that support and maintenance of life, that infinite provision of life. You just get a new sense of life, you see, and that exaltation of life, of being ascending in one's life to a higher and exalted state of being. One gets a newer sense and a higher sense. One just feels that one begins to touch the eternality of one's life, the continuity, the eternal continuity of one's life, the timelessness of one's life, the value of one's life in eternity and its contribution in its eternity. All that. That's what we begin to feel when we are one with that one life, that timeless, eternal, unrestricted, unlimited life. So you can do it with truth, you see, You know what truth is and what the ideas of truth are. You know that there is only one truth in being. All right, that's the word. Then you go and see, well, we can unite with that one truth. Paul has shown us that through our acceptance of that truth, of basing ourselves on that truth, on rejoicingly abiding in that one truth, we are one with that whole truth. And so that truth works as the fullness of the Christ within us, bringing out within us an ever higher sense of truthfulness. It brings out in us an ever higher sense of knowing the truth, of claiming the truth, of being able to have dominion in the truth. It brings out in us an ever higher standard of truth, an ever higher measure of truth, an ever higher Christ-likeness of truth. It brings out in us an ever higher sense of naturally being conscious of all the qualities of God, of the truthfulness of God, of the true qualities of being, of academics of truth and not of sciences. All that, you see. Well, you do that with love. That great term of being, of love, of that sense that God is a mother, that God is love and therefore always includes everything in one big unity, where there is nothing outside but everything included and universal. All right. When we nurture and culture that sense and see that really we are in that love, that we are not outside of that love, that we partake of that love, then naturally this love as the Christ impulsion begins to work within our consciousness, within our whole being, and brings us always nearer and nearer and nearer to that perfect state of motherhood. So it begins to build up within our whole being a sense of being able to mother anything. Begins to build up within our conscious and natural sense of all inclusiveness, of including everything, of never excluding anything, of never having something outside of one's being, of always cherishing all that is within one's consciousness, of tending, of shepherding all that is within one's consciousness, of ministering within all that is within one's consciousness. That sense, you see, is slowly growing with oneself. And we jolly well have to do these exercises, because every one of us, if we look back, well, we have seen that we have come into this world and Adam had quite a talk within ourselves, had quite some doing within ourselves. We were not what we are today. There were all sorts of things within our makeup. Hate and jealousy and ignorance and apathy and I don't know what. Strife and struggle and etc. The whole Adam is within us. We are born through the flesh, and that's not good. Nothing good comes out of the flesh. So each one of us has to get rid of the old Adam, of the wrong man. Well, the laws of Christianity give birth to the true idea man. And so each one of us just has to see that he saves himself from his Adam dream. Each one of us. How can we get out of the Adam dream? Well, religion says, try to get out. The Jews says, well, try to be a good boy. But where to take the power to do that? Where to take it? And Christianity comes and says, you can do it if within your consciousness, if that remnant within oneself, which is divine, if that remnant goes back to God, and with that little bit we still have of the divine in us, if we take that little remnant and unite it with the whole of God, and begin to close that little remnant with the whole of God, that's Christianity, then that has the might of the whole of God. So if each one of us, no matter how much the Adam and the Eve is talking within himself and has a good time within ourselves, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. We are not those righteous people who just look at the Adam and the Eve and say, how much of an Adam are you and how much of an Eve are you? We are those people who begin to see that the only man there is the idea of God, that remnant in each one. And if we can mother that remnant and cherish that remnant, then that remnant will grow because it can close itself with the whole of God. That's the mystery. That's the glory of it. That is possible. That's the invention, so to say, of Jesus. He saw that. And he made good use of it. So now, I should go to Colossians. I have never taken really those triads as one. Well, one can't do everything. Let's go to Colossians. Well, Colossians begins another triad. Colossians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. These three epistles have the focus on another relationship of men. The first triad, Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, had the stress on men's relationship to God, to the Word of God. The second three, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, had a focus on the relationship with the Christ, or the stress on it. And now we come to the third, where the stress is on our relationship with the perfect idea, men. See, Christianity has to do with men. And now within that whole matrix of Christianity, the stress now is put on men as the perfect idea of God, and shows now and teaches now that we should have a perfect relationship with the idea of man as God's perfect idea. Is that clear? Naturally, it is so that we never can leave the other aspects of being out of the picture. So in these epistles you will always find that he speaks about God and about Christ. But the focus is on man as the idea of God, the perfect idea of God. It is more or less that point where Mrs. Eddy would say in the textbook, the admission to oneself that man is God's own image and likeness sets man free to master the infinite idea. See, she says there the same thing what we will encounter here in these three epistles. It is our admission that we are what? That we are men. That we are God's own likeness.